Let's go to Canberra now. The Climate Integrity Summit is being held by the Australian Institute in Canberra today. It has speakers like the former president of Kiribati, the former prime minister of Tuvalu, economists, climate scientists and politicians. It will also hear from a farmer from near Hamilton in Victoria. Mark Wootton operates Jigsaw Farms and has been counting carbon for decades. He's speaking on the topic, why the carbon neutral myth is bad for farmers. We spoke about that earlier today, but I also started by asking him to describe his farm and his efforts on it.
Jigsaw Farms is a beef sheep operation, southwest Victoria. We're just north of Hamilton. We're high input, high output operation. We are at scale, so we've got 800 breeding cattle and about 18,000 ewes, merino ewes, and we sell products into mainstream markets predominantly, but we're also into some of the what I call the boutique markets for carbon neutral products. We have Coles carbon neutral beef, and we have some of the specialist wool brands through ZQ, which we sell into those.
And for how long have you been looking at reducing carbon or carbon neutrality on your farm?
So this is the interesting story. We are carbon neutral from probably in the 2007 to 2015 or 16, which we did a full study with the University of Melbourne of, which showed that. And then we've just redone the study. And what's happened is we've slipped out of being carbon neutral, predominantly because the way we reached carbon neutrality was we've got inset trees, so saw log timbers and permanent re-veg shelter belts, which covers 19% of the farm, and they've now matured to a point where they've reached saturation point, for want of a better word, where they're slowing down how much CO2 they're absorbing. So we've gone from this weird thing from, as I explained to some people, we were FOMO, we're fear of missing out, going at a rapid rate to get to climate neutral when we put all these trees in, and everyone's has contacted us and said, oh, you poor things, you've now fallen out, even though we're still at 88% carbon neutral. And I've gone to what we call ROMO, which is relief of missing out, because now I don't feel like we're this held up as these pioneers that everyone keeps coming to say this is the solution. And we've realised how complex the whole thing is, and also that we need other tools in our toolbox to be able to get to carbon neutrality, which is attacking it at source, which for us is predominantly at trying to lower our methane input impact from our ruminant animals.
So this brings me to the topic of your talk and what you're discussing today then, why the carbon industry myth is bad for farmers. Is this the relation of your sort of journey in it from being carbon neutral and slipping out, and where you see farmers fitting in then to this industry?
I think it is. I think there's an expectation, I think, partly through general community, but also partly through the purchasers of our products who have signed up to this science-based target initiative, which says they at some point, whether it's JBS or Coles or whoever it is, are going to be carbon neutral sometime in the future up to 2050. So they're going to have to be sourcing their supplies from people who have got lower carbon footprints. So and that's us as food or fibre producers. That'll be us. So we're quite conscious of the need to do that. And interestingly enough, under those guidelines, they can only have 10% of those products eventually, which they'll be able to buy their own offsets for. So 90% will have to be dealt with in the supply line somewhere. And for farmers, that's going to be us. And so my argument is, if you are in this carbon space where you're selling your offsets to third parties, whether it's soil carbon or trees or whatever it is you're doing, you are going to get yourself caught, because you're going to need those credits for yourself. And then I have a second argument, which is that a lot of the methods that are coming forward, particularly in the soil carbon, are just not scientifically based. They're not enduring, they're not permanent, and they're not additional. And that's where the big challenge is for a lot of farmers, because we've got the sharks, I call them, or the ticket clippers, which are the carbon aggregators coming around to us. I'm in a street in Canberra. You could just hear someone in a very non climate-friendly car just went past. that's the challenge, is that we, as farmers, we have to understand what is real and what isn't real in this space. And some of the people who are selling us products, I think, have got their own motives to do it. And the liability will sit with farmers at the end when they're gone, will be my guess.
So you're someone with skin in the game then in this space, but you see a difference between what is being promised from the industry of what the role of farmers could be, but that difference is compared to your experience on the ground, where you see the role being very different of your farm and where it's going to fit into this future, this more carbon neutral future.
It is, and as suppliers of products, we need to be looking what we're going to market our product. It doesn't matter what our view of climate change is or the methane argument or anything. If the customer's demanding a product as they see that they want to have a lower carbon footprint on, we need to provide that footprint, and we need to provide that in a rigorous scientific way that shows that it's real, or we'll be called greenwashing. And so that's the challenge for us. And at the moment, you've got a raft of, some of these carbon aggregators who are just buying them for what I think are other industries who have got alternatives to not buy offsets, and predominantly the greenhouse gas polluters, and they should be dealing with it in their own supply line like we have to.
But Mark Wootton, you have an example of this right now in terms of what farmers are being told, or what the industry is being told, and what the reality is on the ground, don't you?
Yeah, there's a report put out by Rupertex, I think last couple of weeks, which is basically saying that, Australia is going to become the biggest in the world supplier of carbon offsets. So, and of that, there's, 71% of them are going to be produced, through regeneration on land or soil carbon or plantation forestry, whatever it is, and that'll only be growing, and they will be presumably for the market for the gas and the oil or the coal industry to be able to offset their emissions. So my biggest issue for this is twofold. One is, as an ag community, we need to keep all our own, because we need all our owns, because we're going to struggle to be able to offset our own emissions as a sector. And the second one is that I think that there could be some serious land management changes going on if we have carbon farming spreading across the whole Australian landscape for these other industries, and I fundamentally get worried where we're going to produce our food and fibre from.
So if the focus becomes on turning Australia into the world's biggest carbon sink, you worry about what that means for agriculture in that world?
Correct. I think it's agriculture does need our own, to keep our own carbon credits for ourselves or to inset, and haven't got a surplus to be able to sell to third parties.
Food production aside, is that even achievable given your experience of taking carbon neutrality through to saturation on your farm and then slipping back into being an emitter? The idea of Australia as a carbon sink and carbon farming for that seems short-term in terms of what it can produce.
Well, correct. And the science is pretty compelling that Australian agriculture is going to have enough trouble hanging on to the soil carbon we have now as it gets warmer and we have more drying events. I mean, soil carbon, and when you increase your soil carbon, is directly normally related to rainfall. So this long-term-wise is a real risk. If you're signing up to some of these schemes and you have them on farm and you don't deliver on those schemes, who's going to be left holding the baby when those contracts, when someone says, where's the product that we've bought off you?
Do you think leaders in agriculture, not just yourself, but agricultural lobby and leadership needs to be engaging in this space more often to advocate for farming?
I think that leadership in the ag industry should be front and centre, saying we've got to be honest, saying we've got a fundamental issue. We haven't got all the tools in the toolbox to fix it. But what we do know is that we shouldn't be solving other people's problem using our landscape and our production capacity to fix other problems for the other greenhouse gas polluters.
So what is the path forward for farming in your mind?
Well, that's probably the hardest question I ever get asked, and I think the problem is, and as we've just found out, whether you do proper soil carbon or you do trees, and a lot of soil carbon that I see is not proper, by the way. It's very transitional, and the claims that people are making are outrageous. But putting all that to one side, whatever you do, it will be transitional because we all will reach saturation point at some point with the, whether you whatever system you're doing. So what we need to do from a farming community and from a research point of view, we need to make sure that we've got more tools in the toolbox, which is attacking predominantly methane at source. So we need to lower that methane output from these ruminant animals. And at the moment, there's work being done, but there's nothing commercially that we can just grab to use. And that's the challenge for us going forward. And to be honest with you, if you're asking me to be really frank, I suspect agriculture will struggle to get there completely. And so we may need other industries to do a heavier lift where they've got alternatives because humans need food and fibre.
And I'd imagine then that doesn't sit well with your industry's goals, right, of carbon neutrality in the near future.
Well, that's you know, I presume you're referring to like MLA and their carbon neutral 2030 target. I still think it's a great thing initiative they've done because if we hadn't done it, we would be further behind from where we are. And I don't know where we're going to end up. I'm not saying I've got the science to say exactly where that point is, other than I think that by doing what we've been doing and what we need to do even at a faster rate and start pedaling even harder, we will get there sooner than if we did nothing. And so that my view always with these things is I get up in the morning and I have grand targets of everything I'm going to get done, and I don't always achieve those targets, but that's how I operate, and I think that's how farmers operate.
You're listening to The Country Hour. We're speaking to Mark Wootton, who's near Hamilton at Jigsaw Farms, about his farming business, also how it relates to carbon markets and what he sees as the future in this space as well. Mark Wootton, back on your property then, take me into your decision-making processes as you've slipped out of carbon neutrality, as you reached saturation for a lot of the trees and vegetation that you'd planted on your property. Do you have ideas for rejigging your operation to improving your carbon capture again, or do you have to then look at your methane output or your CO2 output from your animals? What do you do now?
We only have a modest amount we can do in terms of improving our sequestration opportunities through trees. We're sort of at 19%. We've probably got 1% or 2% we can still fiddle with in some less productive country. So that's limited.
And not a long-term option then.
Well, that's the learning from us. We thought we were pretty clever at the beginning and we realised we weren't. But the other thing we do that we know what we can control, so focus on your controllables. If we can improve our fecundity levels and look at growth rates for, you know, our beef or our lamb operation where we finish stock quicker, we will be a lot more efficient. I mean, when a JBS or a Coles will be purchasing beef in the future and they have to look at the carbon emissions per unit, they will buy the most efficient product because they will reach their goals earlier. So we want to be in that preferential market, and that works well with farming because it means we look at our genetics and we look at our production system, and we're looking at also really, is there other new innovative techniques, whether we use we have a lamb feedlot finishing system. Do we introduce a 3-NOP or an additive into that which lowers the methane, and how do we measure what it's doing? These are all the challenges, you know, for our family. And, you know, I've got a son that's home now and, you know, he's bright and enthusiastic. So we're throwing the gauntlet down to him to start working on some of this stuff as well. So, you know, I don't think it's without hope. I just think we just need to be fairly honest about how quickly we can get there and make sure that when we do talk to people, we talk it through a science-based and evidence-based process and not some of the myths that are going on.
And you're at the Climate Integrity Summit on that very topic today from the Australia Institute. Can you give a comment on where you see agriculture is at the moment? There's an enormous spread between those who will never believe in climate change to those who are waiting for industry to do something, to those like you who have been at the forefront of experimenting on your own properties for quite a long time now. Where do you see where agriculture is at a whole and where the work needs to be done?
So I can't talk on behalf of all agriculture, but I can observe that those who want to be in a preferred position going forward and have more markets for their product, and I remember I saw Tom Bull talk about this at an MLA conference last year. I heard him talk about it. And basically his response, which was pretty good, as a producer of product, you want to maximize your consumer base so you have more consumers who want your product, and therefore you'll have more price presumably coming through on that. So why wouldn't we do that as agriculture? So whether you accept climate science or you think it's a furphy or it's an urban rural divide or any of those things, to me, I don't really care. I just look what the markets are doing and what they're where they're moving and what they're dictating, and we need to provide product for that going forward. You know, most farmers I talk to understand that. You know, not all, but most do. And so it's about preferential markets, and eventually they just want to get themselves and in a better position. The truth also is that there's no downside in having a more efficient animal-based system where you have more lambs and more calves that finish quicker and you've got more product to sell. I mean, there's no downside in that, just from a straight economics point of view.
Well, Mark Wootton, it's been great to talk to you from the busy streets of Canberra this morning, and thanks for talking to The Country.
Thank you very much, Warwick.